Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Welcome along to the shorthanded version of the group chat this week. Richard and Zara in today. Gavin en route to Washington for the White House visit. Are you excited, Zara, about what we're about to talk about?
I am. Hook it to my veins. I have been glued to this story this week. This is, of course, the Kate Middleton Photoshop scandal that has just emerged into a broader scandal in many ways.
It has. We talked to Chris Shipp from ITV, the royal editor of ITV, only a few weeks ago. And I didn't think we'd be talking to him again for a long time.
By virtue of the fact
that, you know, nothing's really happening. But the amount of questions, the amount of scrutiny, the amount of conspiracy theories and online detective work has really made this a phenomenal story. So we got Chris Shipp back up on the line and we asked him to start us off, what the hell is happening over there?
That's a really good question. I didn't think that I'd be talking about a picture that we were questioning the authenticity of that's been released by the royal family's official channels. There's the picture and a lot to talk about within it. So what's going on over here? Quite a lot is the answer.
Just to bring people back. So there was this whole online, you know, series of questions. Where is Princess Catherine? Where is Kate Middleton? Where has she been for all these months? The royal family releases this photograph on Mother's Day, this lovely smiley photograph, which we're all seeing now. And online sleuths, have-a-go detectives effectively, are looking at it. They're looking at all these edits and they're pointing out elements of Photoshop here. I mean, Chris, you've been a journalist for a long time across, you know, covering the royal beat and politics as well. Have you ever seen a PR job so badly botched as this one?
No, really. And then the trouble is, and as we all know, Kate's admitted to it. She's put out that apology on social media, saying that she, like a lot of other amateur photographers, she experiments with editing. The thing is, this isn't editing that you and I might do as in, you know, change the exposure, warm up the picture.
Filter, maybe. Yeah.
We're not throwing a bit of Paris filter over it.
Well, you know, sometimes when the background's a bit too sort of black and you can fiddle it, or you can make the sun look really nice sometimes when it's a bit grey. And heaven knows, don't we know that at this time of year. This was, you know, something of a different order. And again, not my area of expertise, but photos contain a lot of data, and within which technical experts can get this thing called metadata from it. And they've worked out exactly when this image was put through Photoshop, and they've worked out it was done twice, once on the Friday and once on the Saturday, before this image was released on the Sunday morning. Kensington Palace haven't told us exactly what Kate changed. We've asked for the original. Well, what did the original look like? So we can sort of compare, and that's not coming our way, and I don't think it ever will.
Chris, we've had a chance to meet some of the Kensington Palace press officers over the years during various different royal visits, and we don't know them as well as you do, and we don't know their sort of experience, age and experience, for want of a better term. You know, people would have imagined that they would have, you know, been really watertight on this image before it was released. You know, is there an experienced comms team there, or is a lot of the staff there, are they new, or what can you tell us about the dynamic of the comms team that looks after William and Kate?
Well, look, I mean, I would say that in hindsight, it's great, isn't it? It's a wonderful thing. You would have said, well, I'm going to check this picture out before I give it out to, you know, royal correspondents like me, and I'm going to zoom in and check every single corner of it. You don't really do that. And especially if it's come from your boss, Catherine, Princess Catherine, who said to you, oh, here's a picture for Mother's Day. I think everyone's going to like it. William took it of, you know, the four of us last week. I mean, if that was my boss, I would kind of take it for granted that she was telling the truth. And, you know, it, unless she told the bosses and they ignored it, which I don't think is what happened here, clearly they didn't check it. Yes, of course. But I don't think I checked it either. I mean, because I could have spotted all these inconsistencies at 9 o'clock in the morning on Mother's Day. Instead, I just looked at it and thought, well, that's a good picture. She's got three kids. They've all got their eyes open. They're all smiling and no one's got the hair blowing across their face. Whereas anyone who's got three kids knows that's normally pretty impossible. And I just thought, well, isn't that a nice picture? Hasn't she done well and doesn't she look good? Maybe in hindsight, we should have all gone, well, hold on a minute. Doesn't she look too good? And what's going on with Charlotte's sleeve? And why are all these digital glitches in the background? Hindsight's a great thing. I think the press office were taken aback by it. And particularly because these were big international picture agencies, the like of which that you and I deal with all the time in this job, Reuters, AFP, AP, Associated Press, they all killed the picture. That's a really big thing to do. I'm sure before they put those statements out on Sunday evening, they must have all gone to the top of the tree and checked with the bosses. Are you happy that we do this?
Well, here's what's interesting about this, Chris, and I was thinking about this after it happened. You know, when the photo agencies make the move to kill this, right, straight away that damages the credibility of the Wales, as formerly known as the Cambridges, as a primary source for their own content. And, you know, over the years we've seen, you know, Kate has said she's an amateur photographer, we've seen beautiful pictures be released over the years. But in some ways that has replaced what would have primarily been a photo call opportunity where press photographers would have been invited to take a photo for, be it a birthday, a special occasion, or for example, when we saw after Meghan Markle gave birth, you know, one photographer, one camera from the pool and one reporter was sort of sent in to get the shot, ask the question and then circulate to the rest of the press. Do you think that something like this now will mean that the Waleses will be under more pressure to engage with that photo op structure going forward?
The reason why it's worked really for both sides is that, you know, the media or the world has been given these pictures of, say, significant birthdays or the kids' birthdays, and they've been taken by Kate. And you know what? If I was a sort of six-year-old, I wouldn't fancy someone I didn't know, you know, trample into my room and ask to take a picture. So it's kind of worked both ways. They said, well, look, if Kate gives us a nice picture of the kids, I mean, no one's actually said this, by the way. This is kind of the arrangement that everyone's come to. If Kate gives us a nice picture of the kids, that's great. And then we won't, you know, come in and demand photos or try and get photos with the kids, et cetera, et cetera. Let's remember that they are, you know, Prince George, who's, you know, Kate's oldest child, is only 10 years old. He's still at primary school. And we should remember that when we're talking about these kids here. So Kate's taken the pictures herself, we were told William took this picture as well. And you can even tell from my tone of voice, we were told William took this picture. Well, suddenly we're questioning, well, did he take this picture? And when was it taken? And was it really taken in Windsor last week, like you told us? And you can suddenly hear that level of mistrust in my voice, because that's kind of the consequence of what's happened here, is we're now going to question all of these things. Why didn't they invite a photographer in, just as you say, just one, and share the picture as they've done before? There's a chap called Chris Jackson. He works for Getty Images. He's taken quite a few royal photos behind the scenes and then distributed it to everybody. They could have done that. Obviously, in hindsight, that would have been a great idea as well.
You make a good point there, Chris. And I think this is why, for people who are listening to this, who might be questioning, well, why are we giving this so much time? Or why is it so important that we talk about, you know, kings and queens and princes and princesses and, you know, something which is over an Instagram post effectively? But this speaks to where we are now, where you have digital manipulation of things. You can have powerful organizations or governments or bodies can manipulate and change whatever they like and just try and walk it off, try and have their own edited version of history. And I mean, that might seem like it's quite a weighty or quite a serious way of putting this, but effectively this is, you know, this is Britain's royal family and pushing this out to the major news agencies of the world. And you mentioned how rare it is that there is a kill notice. I actually spoke to somebody from one of the wires, said they issue effectively five or fewer kill notices on images per year. So that's how rare it is this happened. Mm. This does speak to a very serious potential problem, which is something which everyone around the world in this age of misinformation is trying to get to grips with. This is a big example of that, isn't it?
You're right. And let's just start off with the picture agencies. They've got very high standards. Why do they have those? Well, because they need to be able to tell people this is a real verified photograph of, I don't know, Gaza or, you know, something that's happened in Israel or somewhere else in the world. And apparently, and I didn't know this, but they don't even allow you to correct red eye in a picture because they don't want it to be digitally altered. They have to be that satisfied that this picture is true in all sense. Of the word, and hence why when they all went and issued these kill notifications, it became such a big story. And then you talk about the wider issue at the moment, which is of, you know, digital manipulation of, you know, AI. I mean, the things you can do with AI now. In fact, one of our team in the office is making a little program about AI, and she got Robert Peston. He's our political editor. You can just give someone like 15, 20 seconds of them speaking, like I'm speaking to you now, and somebody can completely, you know, create an AI and get that person to say whatever they can, and it looks pretty real. And they showed it to Robert Peston, and yeah, he was pretty surprised about how accurate it looked. And that's the problem at the moment. You've got all this ability to do digital manipulation. Turns out Kate did it quite badly. Let's be clear. Photoshop is not clearly something she's brilliant at. But you know, again, I think talking in hindsight, we should all have seen these little images, like, you know, why does Charlotte's cuff not match up? What's the going on with Louis's jumper? And what's that line right across the front of Kate? You know, top and a zip's not matching up on all the rest of it. It's just a lot easier to do that now with everything that we've been speaking about. There we go. There's the cuff, yeah, that doesn't match up.
Cuff. And I know.
But you know, also, like, when you take, you know, when you get your phone, you do one of those panoramic views. But somebody because it's gone from there to there, somebody's moved, and you get that slight glitch, don't you? We're kind of used to that. But obviously, this is a, you know, what we thought was a still family photograph with them all in the same place at the same time. But, you know, we spoke to a couple of experts who said that if you look at the picture, there's a lot of digital noise around the outside, which is apparently normal. That shows it's a sort of the original picture, if you like. But in the centre there, it is very flat, not very noisy, I suppose, the opposite. Quiet, would it be? Digitally quiet in the middle. And that's why he thinks that, you know, that there has been something changed or replaced in the middle of the photograph. So, you know, was Prince Louis and Princess Charlotte actually sat on the chair? We don't know. I mean, we've got all these questions now about what exactly it was that Kate photoshopped, and, you know, Kensington Palace are rather hoping this thing will go away.
Here's the thing, Chris, and I don't expect, by the way, reminding our listeners that Chris is a royal correspondent, doesn't answer
Leave
for
Chris
the royal,
alone.
He doesn't answer for the royal family, and we're going to get to your questions in just a moment. But, you know, I would have thoughts about, I think, right, you know, if they really wanted to put all this to bed, and let's be honest, the lack of information has filled a vacuum and everyone has read, you know, people are obsessed with the conspiracy theories that are out there. But, you know, I suppose the logical side of my brain as a journalist and somebody who would be familiar with people who work in comms is, like, why not just do as we just discussed there, send in one pool photographer, get the picture and get out. You know, I mean, look, I appreciate that this is a lady who is recovering from surgery, and we don't actually know how well or unwell she actually is, and I you know, we respect that. But, you know, in order to kind of put this to bed, you would think that they would do something like that. And I think the fact that the, you know, that the Princess of Wales isn't, you know, sort of moving to that does suggest that there perhaps could be something going on behind closed doors. Again, not for you to answer that, Chris, but you know, are your colleagues requesting that? Are there many bids going in for that idea of allowing a pool photographer in to get that one photograph, sort of proof of life, for want of a better word?
Yeah, I mean, when you use that form of word, it does seem really crass, doesn't it? And I kind of think, I mean, I haven't personally asked for or demanded a picture of the Princess of Wales. And actually, last week, when all this furore was going on about where's Kate and why haven't we seen her and all the rest of it, my answer to that was, she's just had some pretty major surgery, by all accounts. We don't know exactly what. And they always told her she was going to be off until Easter, and it's not yet Easter. So why don't we just leave her alone and just say, well, you know, we might have questions after Easter to say, OK, how serious is this? What haven't you told us? But right now, she is on medical leave, and therefore, no one asked for a picture on Mother's Day. I certainly didn't demand one. I didn't even expect to get one until, you know, I woke up on Mother's Day, and at 5 to 9, about 5 minutes before the photo hit Kensington Palace's social media, they gave us a little warning that this was on the way. So that was a surprise. And I think, again, hindsight's a great thing. I think they shouldn't just not release anything at all and just said, look, she's ill. She's recovering from an operation. It was a pretty major operation. She's not up for having photography shared with the rest of the world. Clearly, this has had the opposite effect, and everyone's talking about a picture that, you know, in a much greater way than they would have done otherwise. And clearly, next time something like this happens, I think we will be saying, well, let's just allow in one pool photographer. For example, there was a picture of the King out on Monday, and we don't see him all the time at the moment. We see him a bit more often than Kate. But it was taken by the UK cameraman, who is jointly supplied by BBC, ITV and Sky, who we all partly fund him, and he is the royal cameraman to take pictures of the King and Queen and film them on behalf of the other broadcasters. That arrangement exists, and therefore I know that picture of the King was taken on the 29th of February. It was taken at Windsor Castle because my colleague, the cameraman, told me he did it, and is therefore much more difficult when you're relying on Kensington Palace for information, and we have to take that as gospel, of course. And yet it turns out that, you know, there was a lot wrong with this picture and a lot of things that Kate didn't share with her communications team and therefore didn't share with all of us.
The best way I think I've seen someone describe the situation which the royals have dug themselves into, it was Lindsay Holmes of NPR Radio in the US, who says, do not feed amphetamines to a dragon you're hoping will fall asleep, i.e. the royals offering up this digitally manipulated photograph to the internet and the internet age of now, where people online know what a bad Photoshop is and they know all the various ways things can be twisted. Like, there can be some really damaging impacts of this. These sort of, you know, people are talking about using the phrase conspiracy theorists. In some cases online in the last couple of days, we've definitely seen stuff approaching into that space. But really, there can be damaging personal impacts on this, because this, as you say, Chris, this could have just been washed away. They could have just said, look, we know a lot of people are looking for things at the moment. We can just say, look, as we're sticking to business as usual, things are as planned. She's recovering from surgery. It was a serious surgery. Let her be for now. They didn't do this, and now they've created an absolute monster or a dragon, as our American colleagues have described it.
Yeah, and I think you have to say, what is the polite way of saying that Kate's probably a bit naive if she thought that she could do this to a photograph and that no one would notice. And, you know, I think that would be the polite way of saying, well, didn't you realise that in an age where there is a lot of conspiracy going on about you, to supply a digitally manipulated photograph is only going to make that matter even worse. It's like, as you say, giving amphetamines to the dragon. So, yes, it's made everything worse in terms of the conspiracies of where's Kate and what you're trying to hide. And before today, we only had that one paparazzi photograph that we, or actually no UK broadcaster or newspaper showed. I don't know what the situation was where you are, but it was a paparazzi photograph and it was taken without Kate's permission somewhere in Windsor. And we all decided we wouldn't run it, because if you pay for paparazzi photographs, then you just encourage more of them and then more get taken. And before you know it, you're back in 1997 with cameras shoved in Princess Diana's face, you know, everywhere she walks. So we didn't run that picture. And as you say, this has made those conspiracy theories much worse than they were before.
OK, we're going to do quick fire on the listener questions, because I know you've got loads to do, Chris. You're a very busy man. So we'll just fly through a couple of them. Nicole wants to know, why doesn't Kate just jump on TikTok live and squash all these rumours?
I'd love that.
Well, great idea. Are they on TikTok? I'm not sure they're on TikTok, but she could jump on Instagram. She could do lots of things. But again, I think we do have to remind ourselves, we've got here, a mother of three children who's had some, very serious surgery and doesn't want cameras all over her. And again, we just discussed about the mistake that she's made with this particular image. But yeah, you could jump on TikTok, you could go many places and just say, hey, here I am, everyone. This is live. I don't think that's going to happen.
Another says, ask Chris if the Royal Rota are secretly loving the drama of it all.
Do you know what? No, I mean, it's funny, isn't it? I mean, I've had a fair amount of abuse this week that I've been hounding Kate, or I should leave her alone, or why are you making such a fuss about the picture? Well, we just explained why we made a fuss, because, you know, some very respected picture agencies killed it and we therefore couldn't trust the information that we were given by the palace. And I think you kind of fall into two camps in social media, as ever, isn't it? Very black and white. There's never any areas of grey. On Twitter particularly. And I think some people think that we, in the British press have been hounding her. I mean, I even put up a post of them talking about it in the White House, and people saying, why didn't you leave it alone? I thought, well, I didn't create this. I didn't ask that question in the White House. I wasn't the person in the room talking about it. It was an American reporter who asked President Biden's press secretary about it. So, and it's our job to report things fairly and accurately. And if that happened, it happened. But I think there are a bunch of people out there who think that we've gone over the top on this and that we're hounding the Princess of Wales. I mean, look, I think we'll all agree. We've discussed the issues of trust and digital manipulation and why this was such a big story at a time when there were already lots of conspiracy theories out there.
And finally, Chris, look, this is one that's come a few times, is this allegation of there being some sort of an affair going on in the background. Of course, as you mentioned there, as correspondents, you deal in facts and not fiction. From your perspective, has there ever been anything to suggest such a thing?
When you say affair, you're talking about...
This allegation that Prince William has had some sort of an affair and that there's right. this trouble in the marriage is the, a question that's come up many times, this right. specific one coming from Emer.
You mean an extramarital affair as mm-hmm. opposed to an affair surrounding a photo? Well, again, look, I just simply don't know. I mean, yes, there's stuff out there all the time about this. There's stuff out on social media about lots of things. And until you're presented with some form of fact, there's nothing to suggest any of it's true. Yeah, I've read the stuff. I've seen the stuff. Lots of people have, I'm sure, these days. But, why don't we report it? Well, A, it's a very private matter, and B, there's actually nothing to substantiate the story. So, although I did see yesterday, there was a late night American TV chat show. Stephen Colbert was openly talking about it on American TV. But again, we're talking about rumor and gossip online, and you're a journalist, we're a journalist, we deal in fact, and that's what we do.
Absolutely.
Well, it doesn't seem like the royals are putting this one to bed anytime soon, so you might not have seen the last of us, Chris. Anyway, we might be calling your number again on this, but thank you so much
for
taking our
Chris.
Questions
Good
today.
Good to chat to you again.
You're welcome.
Well, this week brought the very sad news that longtime RTE News correspondent and campaigner Charlie Bird passed away, his death being confirmed yesterday. That was Tuesday, wasn't it? Mm-hmm. I mean, very, very sad news. And it's very rare you see it. It's such an outpouring from all corners for... Such a unique man was Charlie Bird, wasn't he, Zara?
It was. And I feel like it was a testament to the man that he was, actually, in the work that he did, because so many people described him as being somebody who changed the face of journalism in Ireland in so many ways. And I think one of the things that came up time and time again with the tributes that we had yesterday, because I was at RTÉ in Donnybrook yesterday, was the idea that Charlie Bird was someone who remained impartial, but also was able to bring empathy to a story. And we've talked about that so many times here on the podcast, because we do like to kind of break the fourth wall and talk about journalism and how it works. And that is a skill in itself, isn't it, Richard? That's, it's something that you really could see in his work down through the years, particularly in his relationship with the Stardust families. In the book of condolence, actually, yesterday, Antoinette Keegan, who's a Stardust survivor, described Charlie Bird as her best friend, said that she loved him.
Yeah, that connection between Charlie Bird and the Stardust families, like, that's as genuine as it gets.
Yeah.
That's as real as it could possibly be. And you don't necessarily see that too often between reporters or correspondents who are attached to stories and the subjects of those stories, which just speaks to how unique Charlie Bird was. I mean, I did the obituary for us here on Virgin Media yesterday, and it was great to actually be able to go back through the trove that was there. Yeah. I mean, there's a particular favourite, and everyone loves it, is the clip of him seeking out and tracking down David Drum in Cape Cod at the height of the financial crisis and knocking on the door saying, oh, he's there, I can see him. Why are you ducking down? And your
and
man's
David
there.
David shouting, have a bit of respect, yeah. Charlie. Go
what are you doing, Charlie? It's amazing. It's a great clip.
Do you think it was his personality that sort of allowed him to pursue things like that, though? You know, that he had the bravery to kind of, go there, knock on the door. And, in a way, actually, that approach was sort of inoffensive, but it was really effective,
He didn't mind putting himself in front of the camera, or getting involved a bit and just using, because he had a personality. And this was something which was actually, it was quite beautiful, really, to actually listen to yesterday on the radio, colleagues like Tommy Gorman, George Lee, and just how emotional they were and how fondly they remembered him and how much that they described him as such a people person, that it wasn't even, that it was his analytical skills, which were amazing, his on-air personality, which was spectacular as well, but it's just ability just to get involved and just to be a bit of a character, a bit of a chancer. Yeah. Really stood to him, and it did stand out in all the years, even just watching him. And I remember I think he had a book out years and years ago, which I read when I was a teenager. It was probably called This is Charlie Bird, or I Am Charlie Bird. Mm-hmm. This is Charlie Bird, and it's just that comes across in everything. I mean, people will talk back to You know, his coverage around 9/11 was unbelievable. Mm. The Indian Ocean tsunami and earthquake, incredible as well. Even the Love Ulster riots, that was a fairly infamous one that was more domestic to him here. He just had a knack, really, of elevating stories, being in the right place at the right time. And just, yeah, he was just overall just a remarkable broadcaster and journalist. But I think that even pales in comparison to what he did later on in his life.
Yeah.
I think that's truly what I think I'll take away from Charlie Bird, is that he was given such a hard sentence effectively in 2021 with the motor neuron disease diagnosis. But you speak about like living your life to the fullness, the fullest in the time that you're given. I think he's the greatest testament to being able to do that and doing that so well.
Yeah.
And just changing so many lives in the process as well.
And he bore that illness with such dignity. I just wanted to go back to the point that you were making there about, you know, his friends and colleagues. I was chatting to George Lee yesterday, and himself and George were so close over the years. And, you know, George was on radio yesterday morning, and he was, you know, he became quite upset. And he said to me after, like, I can't believe how upset I got. But I said, like, of course, that is normal for you to feel that way about somebody that you were so close to and worked so closely to. And he said that one of the lovely things that George said about Charlie Bird yesterday was that Charlie Bird was not afraid to just be unapologetically himself and to show himself in a way that, you know, we talk often about, I've often said that, you know, people who admit, I don't know, or I'm not sure what's going on here, are actually the smartest people in the room, because 100%. They kind of, you know, they end up sort of being, you know, really direct. And particularly as journalists, think sometimes at press conferences is a, you know, a reluctance to maybe go, hang on a second, can we be clearer on this? Or, you know, because people are afraid to make a fool of themselves in the room. But actually, Charlie Bird was never like that. And, you know, George Lee said that he could recall, you know, moments where Charlie Bird would just be so directly himself. And he actually reflected on some of the documentaries that he made. You know, he came back from Washington after being the correspondent, and he kind of went into a role where he was making, like, he made some really cool documentaries actually during that time. And he was,
yeah, there was he did a Tom Crean sort of voyage one. He did that, the Washington Correspondent one, which was all about, like, you know, how he didn't really connect with that role. There was a loneliness.
But he said he missed his family. He
which
was really
is, just great honesty.
Honest.
Yeah.
I loved that. I loved that he said, you know what, I actually found Washington really tough. It was quite lonely. I thought that was really, you know, really admirable. Who's, you know, people don't often, men aren't actually very quick to probably admit things like that. And it was actually a very, very strong thing that he did. But he was telling, George was telling a story about how he'd been making a documentary, and it's like that they were filming in a tent or something, and there was like a spider in the tent. And like Charlie was afraid of spiders or something, and he was squealing kind of, you know. And it was just like George said, it just made for a great television moment, but also it was just so like on the money, Charlie Bird, you know.
Yeah. I think it was 3.6 million euros he then raised later on in life for the Irish Motor Neuron Disease Association and Pieta House as well, which, if you listen to those charities, those groups themselves, like the amount of money that came from Climb with Charlie, it just completely ballooned anything which would be in their annual estimates for how much they could possibly fundraise. So the amount of money that was raised for people with motor neuron disease, and then you have the awareness factor as well, which is a huge thing, because this is such a, you know, it's a cruel, cruel illness in so many ways. But the amount of awareness, the amount of, you know, just visibility he's shone on people with that particular disease, and the amount of, you know, the change he was about to bring, he's able to bring to people who were sufferers of that, really is quite remarkable. So, I mean, I think anybody's connected to anyone in Ireland who has, you know, knows people with motor neuron disease, anyone with a connection to the media in Ireland, anyone who's just had an interest in Irish life and the many changes that have been brought about in this country over the decades will have a really, really fond memories of Charlie Bird, I think.
Definitely. Definitely. And I think, it, you know, as well, just to point out as well, that close relationship you have with people like Vicky Phelan as well towards the end, you know, that himself and Vicky were very close, and like, you know, two people who made such a significant change to Ireland, really working closely together towards the end of both of their lives.
Now, obviously, through the years as well, he was no stranger to reporting on politics. One wonders what he would have made.
Gavin told a really good story on the news. Actually, Gavin's not here this week because, as we were saying, he's travelling with the Taoiseach. But Gavin told this really great story at the end of the bulletin yesterday, about how Charlie Bird had been, was it assigned to follow Fianna Fáil in one of the elections in the 90s or something, and that, you know, they thought, Fianna Fáil thought this was great that the chief correspondent was following them. And then he said that a lot of the markings that they went to, the people turned up to see Charlie Bird instead of Bertie Ahern,
reverse,
and that
Magnus,
they were chanting his, you know, chanting there's only one Charlie Bird and stuff, that he was just such that was the level of sort of magnetism he had.
So obviously it would be interesting to know what he would have thought of the referendum results over the weekend, and no vote delivered, very much flying against the campaigns of all the government parties parties, as well as all of the main opposition parties as well, apart from AIM2 and Independent Ireland, newly formed, of course, as well. Zara, we were talking about this briefly over the weekend over over WhatsApp. I mean, what was really the feeling from people who actually went and voted no, who got back to you? Did they have the reasons for that? What was really behind a lot of their thinking?
Well, it's interesting. You know, I don't think it's fair to say that just everybody didn't understand what was going on. That's totally inaccurate to say that.
Totally,
because, you know, when I put a poll up on Saturday, and remember, I want to be honest, that like most, like 90% of my followers on Instagram are women under 45. So that's, you know, the demographic we're talking about. You know, these women were sort of clear in saying that about 58% said the no was a definite no, that they didn't agree with it. Their reasons for it, and I want to read you through some of the replies, there were hundreds of replies, and I have to be honest, I didn't read all of them because there was just too many to get through. But some of the key ones that came back were: a definite no until the government knows how to write a paragraph worthy of change, very little time and thought went into the amendment, and definitely no time spent informing the public on what the change means or why. So okay, you could argue that that no was more about the fact that they just didn't agree with the wording of it. Someone else said sloppy language used in both and not enough information on what it would mean in everyday life or cases. Both of them need to be changed, but the care bill alternative was not good enough to be voted into our constitution. Couple more. Not no because I disagree with the idea of changing these parts of the constitution, but because they weren't written properly. It could have been great and a sign of real change, but it just wasn't done right. Another said, listen to the debates and I could not figure out what it would truly mean. I was very confused. Someone else came out and said it was a protest vote and the people don't trust the government. Had the government canvassed for a no, the people would have voted yes, yes. I'm not entirely convinced of that.
History shows it's really hard for governments to win referendums on constitutional changes, which are really about, you know, just altering the wording, and people can't see a real immediate tangible change out of it. And that was the debate about it. What difference is this going to make to people's lives?
Yeah.
If it's things like marriage equality referendum or repealing the Eighth Amendment, effectively legalising abortion, people can see what that means.
Yeah.
You know, people can see this is what it's going to mean if we vote yes or vote no. With this, people, I mean, you pointed to some people who were not entirely happy with the wording. A lot of people were, it was a very lacklustre campaign across the board anyway. Like, people weren't energised or fired up about this referendum. And that sort of is borne out in the turnout as well.
Yeah, it is. No, it absolutely is. Sorry, just the other thing, this came up the whole way through the campaign, but this person saying that the first one was a very hard choice. I voted no, but it was, if it was worded better, I probably would have voted yes. Second one was a straight no and will be until we have a definition on durable relationships. Hard to know which one was one or two there now, because obviously the pages were different. This idea of durable relationships seemed to be catching all the way through, that people were really confused about what that actually meant.
I mean, there is a controversy which is going to be waiting for the ministers when they do come back from wherever they are in the world for St. Patrick's Day, and that is the leaking of the AG advice to the Ditch website first and then to other publications on the eve of the referendum, in which the AG effectively said there would be a possibility of legal challenges, or people would be quite challenging both the family amendment and the care amendment in terms of what could possibly happen in the court. So there wasn't a watertight, you know, amendment to be made here. And that does leave open questions.
Absolutely.
Because the government throughout the campaign said, no, this is okay. There won't be a huge amount of, we're not leaving ourselves open to, you know, reams of legal challenges or court cases as a result of this. So Padraig Tobin, the leader of AIM2, said that as opposed to people jetting off around the world, representing Ireland abroad, that they should be here and answering for what exactly, effectively he says they misled the public over it. But even internally in the government now, there's serious recriminations to be had here.
Okay, let's just have a talk about this, because a lot of people say Fianna Fáil is all over the shop in terms
completely
of
completely all over the shop.
Tell us how they're all over the shop.
So Willie O'Dea came out and he was like, you know, Fianna Fáil needs to go back to basics. That's nothing too controversial. He said that, you know, we need to abandon the Greens and the NGOs and then stop playing to the woke gallery, which is what he felt that this referendum was all about. Micheál Martin had a fairly solid response to this, saying that, like, you know, people have been talking about changing the phrasing around the woman in the home in the constitution going back to 1996. And he says, I'm not sure people were describing each other as woke back in 1996, but Brian Lenehan and people in Fianna Fáil were behind the change then. I think the one which is causing the most anxiety at this point in government is Lisa Chambers, who is effectively the government's representative in the Shannon, the leader of the government in the Shannon. She went out and she canvassed for a yes vote as part of her duties, as part of being part of Fianna Fáil, canvassing for a yes vote. But then she said, she changed her mind and she voted no.
Why did she do that?
I mean, there's an element of it where you have to say you admire the honesty in coming out and saying
100%.
It, but...
And I would also add that you are allowed to change your mind and that 100%. That's, you know, that gives a sense of open-mindedness, absolutely fine. But... like to wait until after the fact to say it, though, is the problem.
I think you have to, if you're a politician, you have canvassed for something and then you change your mind and it's actually the opposite vote to which way you were canvassing. I think you probably owe it to your to the public to say which way you've changed your mind.
Did she wait until the results came in before she said that?
It seems to, that seemed to be the moment when right. she did that. One more, though, for you, actually, on this. And I think this is one which actually, I just think this speaks to a lack of care in the government about this referendum. Two Fine Gael senators were not available to vote on the day because they flew out for the rugby match.
This was shocking.
To watch Ireland play England in the Six Nations in Twickenham. So that was Senator John McGahan, Senator Garrett Ahern, both of Fine Gael. Leo Varadkar's response to it was, "I'm not their mammy." He says it's not for him to decide what to do on their weekends. But I think this is more serious.
It's a lot more serious than that. You can't, like, it's like, that's obviously a way to bat it off and it's a quip or whatever. But I mean, surely, you know, like everyone would have been, like a lot of people I know bent over backwards to turn up at a polling station. You know, I know people who actually did go home to vote and there was a whole thing of how there wouldn't be a big wave of going home to vote because it wasn't as, you know, high profile as the last couple of referendums. But I actually do know people who did go home to vote, who went to the west of Ireland, went down south, you know, so there were people, you know, regular people who were able to make the time to do it. So
you're a member of the Oireachtas.
Why not an elected representative of the
government? You're a member of the Oireachtas. You can watch the match on telly. It's a referendum. We don't have too many of them. It was our first national vote.
Well, I would say, like, getting tickets to the match is like gold dust, so I accept that. However, I think you could have voted and then got a later flight.
Yeah, absolutely.
The match wasn't until Saturday.
Well, look.
The match was not till 4:45 on Saturday.
Yeah.
The vote was closed on Friday night.
It doesn't appear that they're going to get, you know, too much of a scolding over it, apart from the "I'm not their mammy" thing from the Taoiseach in Boston. But yeah, is a curtains for the government, though, just to wrap this up? Probably not really.
No.
The main opposition parties are in the same boat as them. But it does speak to a bubble around Leinster House. And there is a disconnect there with how people and how the polls are sort of reading things and how, you know, government is presenting them.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
We have a new national hero in this country. Not that he wasn't a national hero before. Cillian Murphy, winner of the Best Actor Oscar for Oppenheimer, as predicted.
Yeah.
But huge excitement about it all the same, despite the fact that we did all expect it and we were all rooting for it.
Despite the fact that it was expected, though, I was up on Sunday night and I said, I won't watch it. And then actually couldn't watch it live anywhere. I was trying to follow it online, actually. And I was just waiting for all the clips to come in. I was worried there'd be an upset, you know, because it's always the way with Ireland. You just don't know, like, you're so excited and then the next thing something could go wrong, but it didn't. It was fantastic. And it was bang on 2 a.m. Irish time when he won it. I did stay awake and then I'm sure I was so excited I couldn't sleep afterwards. But it's brilliant. And, you know, I mean, not to mention as well the 4 wins for Element Pictures in Dublin
Poor
Things, including Best Actress for Emma Stone. So, you know, you could argue that Best Actor and Best Actress, both Irish, wins in some regard. But we take a listen to some of the reaction of locals
100%.
Who knew Cillian Murphy. So we begin in Cork first, in the primary school that he used to go to before going to Monkstown in Dublin, where he now lives.
Energy, the enthusiasm, just the belief today when the boys came in, they were hopping in. There was a hop, skip and a jump in them coming in here to school. And like they were meeting at the door and they were saying to me, "Mr. Lyons, did you hear Cillian won the Oscar?"
Very excited. But not only because he's Irish, because he really deserved it.
I've seen him here in Café du Journal on occasions, which is very, very nice, you know. And as I say, very humble, very modest, unassuming, and just a very warm character as well.
Met him on the pier, and he's running with his dog. Met him right outside of his house with his dog, and he's super down to earth, really friendly, lovely.
Great man for his dog, lovely black Labrador. And he's around, he's just like everybody else, you know, he's unobtrusive. I'm sure he'll remain the same. But we're very, very proud. I'm really proud. It's wonderful.
Did you see Oppenheimer yourself?
I got to tell you a funny story. we had a choice between Barbie and Oppenheimer on the night. And I made the wrong choice, but it's on my to-do list.
Barbenheimer lives.
He didn't actually see Oppenheimer.
Hasn't seen it.
But he does meet Cillian Murphy in the local coffee shop, so, you know. He should probably watch it. But great mentions for the dog there.
The dog, the black lab.
We love a dog mention. Anyway, so people are delighted for him. And like, you know, the thing about it is like, he's lucky in a way that, you know, he's Hollywood A-lister, but he still gets to live like a really normal life in Monkstown. People seem to leave him alone, you know, like they're delighted to see him, but they seem to leave him alone.
Yeah.
We spoke
last week about how it might change things for him in terms of taking his career to the next level. So I suppose that's the big question about how that is going to manifest itself. Zara, there is already, as soon as one Oscars comes to an end,
yeah,
the start and the speculation always turns immediately to the next one. And I have, according to Hollywood insiders,
okay,
a very far too early look at what's going to happen in 2025 and the Irish interest therein, right? So obviously we won Best Actor at the Oscars.
We all own this win.
We all
the
own
Oscar
this.
Now.
Own it. Saoirse Ronan is going to be back in the picture next year.
Wow.
Is what they're expecting. So Steve McQueen has a film called Blitz coming out next year about, you know, the bombing of London in the 1940s. Apparently that's already got a lot of Oscar buzz about it. Big, big sort of historical drama, which the Oscar voters traditionally really like. Wow. And Barry Keoghan, who of course some people were annoyed or upset that he didn't get nominated for Saltburn. He is acting in a film by Andrea Arnold called Bird. Now this is the film he jumped out of Gladiator 2 for. So he liked this film so much that he abandoned a huge project like Gladiator 2. So
wow.
Early buzz. I don't know if anybody's actually seen any of these things, but this is what the industry's talking about. So they're already looking towards 2025. But it was a great night. The telecast itself was really good.
The awards are back. Like a lot of the awards have had like increased viewership this year. There does seem to be a bit of a comeback. I mean, the Ryan Gosling performance of I'm Just Ken was
amazing.
So brilliant. I know someone who did say they thought it was better than the Super Bowl halftime show, which I think was a damning indictment on Usher. And I don't know if I entirely agree with it.
I think 100%. Everybody really loved it. And it was the sort of thing which, back in the Billy Crystal sort of 80s and 90s Oscar performances, there was a little bit of silliness. You were
totally
embracing
silly.
That and just going for it. So I think it was amazing. Now, one entertainment linchpin in the States, which isn't the Oscars, but which always gets attention around this time of year, is South by Southwest. And there's always been traditionally a strong Irish element to this as well.
Mm-hmm.
This year, obviously, you know, we have ministers going over to the States for St. Patrick's Day. Catherine Martin flying from one controversy in RTE, flying into South by Southwest. She now faces another controversy there. And that is because all of the Irish bands who were supposed to be playing in South by Southwest have now pulled out.
Who is that now?
So all of these bands, including Kneecap, people who have heard of very much so after Sundance and, you know, the buzz around their film at the moment. All these acts have pulled out because the festival is sponsored by the US Army. And also has links to other weapons manufacturers, et cetera, et cetera. So they've pulled out, obviously, as a protest around Gaza, a show of solidarity with the Palestinian people. Gurriers is a post-punk band from Dublin, which has pulled out of the festival. I was speaking to Piers Callaghan of the band last night. Here's what he had to say about their decision.
She said that she will use every opportunity this week, whether that be through the festival or through other media she has to do throughout the course of the week in relation to Irish relations in America and St. Patrick's Day and all that, but she will use that to kind of speak on our behalf and be the voice for us and really bang the drum for us that we're taking a stand against this, that, you know, this sort of link between arts festivals and, you know, warmongers should not be acceptable and should not be the norm.
It's an admirable principle to stand, isn't it, Richard? Because, you know, you'd imagine that these festivals are big opportunities for these bands. You know, there's a huge audience there to be garnered. You know, it's not as if it's a simple thing to pull out of something like this. You know, it's a big decision to make, but they obviously feel so strongly about it that that's why they're doing it.
It's huge. It's very difficult for Irish acts to break America, and South by Southwest has been such a shop window over the years.
Mm.
So for a lot of these bands, this is a huge opportunity to open themselves up to a new audience and to a record industry over there, which they haven't had access to previously. So that's why these bands have traditionally always gone over there. So for groups to pull out of this, and that Piers Callaghan there was talking about the meeting they had yesterday in Austin with Catherine Martin. Catherine Martin now under pressure herself to pull out of this South by Southwest. She's due to speak at it. She said she's not going to pull out of it, but now she's promised all of the acts. And again, this is the question we asked about Leo Varadkar going to Joe Biden in Washington. How much of an issue is she going to make of Gaza and the protests made there by Irish artists? Because she says she's going to take up the gauntlet for them and say, look, this is going to be central to everything I say at South by Southwest, and on this trip is going to be Gaza, Gaza, Gaza. I don't know if anyone can have full confidence in that, given the nature of St. Patrick's Day and the promotion of the arts that she's going for. So we're nearly out of time this week. I'll be away next week, so Gavin will be back. We're doing a rotating sub.
Yeah, I'm just here all the time.
You're just here all the time.
Come here, how is the training going? You're like literally into the final day or two now before you go. When are you flying on Thursday?
Flying on Friday. So the marathon is on Sunday.
Great. How are you feeling? It's your first marathon. It's a really big deal. I'm really proud of you. I think this is, like, genuinely, I think this is really impressive. And I know you've had, like, injury woes throughout the whole process. And it's
yeah, I'm not where I should be for running a marathon.
But that doesn't matter, Richard.
But, like, just getting it done would be good.
Yeah.
And the whole thing, like, it has been, there was a point there where my physio basically said that it looked like it was done. It wasn't going to happen.
Yeah.
Which obviously was tough because you're doing it and you're attaching a fundraiser to it and all that sort of stuff. And you're kind of like, you know, people can be online, you know, if you're pulled out of it as
a result.
You're
not going to do it now after I gave you a tenner.
I gave you a tenner, can I have my tenner back?
Yeah.
But thankfully not, no. So look, at least I'll make the starting line and hopefully finish it off.
Should be the job anyway, yeah. It's going to be wonderful. And like, when did you decide to do this? Maybe just give people a bit of background as to kind of the decision process, starting out and the training and everything.
Yeah, it was around February last year, I think it would have been. I just took up running and I just kind of, I think it was early summer, maybe like May, I said to Joe Caulfield, formerly of sports department here in Virgin Media,
so, yeah,
and he was training for it as well, and we just sort of said, yeah, look, we'll look and try and do Rome. So I had in my mind to do a fundraiser for Women's Aid all the way through it, so thanks everybody who has donated to that at this
and
point
just to
in
say
time.
It's over €8,000 you've raised so far. Well done.
So it's been great. So yeah, just it's been lovely to see that happen. So yeah, fingers crossed, get through it now unscathed.
People who are listening who might say, like, oh, I'd love to do a marathon one day. Like, what was the commitment here? Like, how often are you running?
Really
you
hard.
Running every day,
it's honestly really hard. And this is why people say, like, the real marathon is actually the training for it.
Okay.
Because so many things go wrong. I know other people who have had to pull out of marathons before in the past because of injuries and just things going wrong. And this, it seemed like that was, like, everything I've ran since Christmas has been with a huge amount of difficulty for knee injury, hip injury, glute injury, IT band. Everything's gone wrong. But here we are. We still made it to the end, you know?
Wow. But like, so exciting though. So exciting. In terms of the fundraising and people making donations, how can they go about doing that? If
yeah, it's all up online on Instagram. And whatnot,
on Richard's socials. You can follow the socials now. And you'll be able to...
I know a few people listeners of the show have been, you know, donated. So thanks so much to everybody for doing that. So yeah, it's been lovely. It's been great. But
are you in Rome for a few more days? Are you going to Anthony's?
Eat loads of pasta. Drink
in
a few
recovery.
Beers. Drink a few beers and eat a mountain of pasta.
You haven't had any beers in the run up to this, so
no, absolutely. And you know, you have to if things have gone wrong in terms of injuries and whatnot, you have to try and give yourself the best chance.
Best possible chance.
So I've done that. I lived like a monk, and now here I am in the holy city to try and turn things around. Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
No, it'll be great. So yeah, I'm really looking forward to it now.
Brilliant. Well, best of luck. We're really proud of you.
Yeah, mind the ship now while I'm gone.
I will. We will.
Yeah. So anyway, thanks so much to everyone for listening to us again. Hopefully more royal conspiracy theories lie
Absolutely.
In store for future episodes.
For next week.
But yeah, from all of us here in the group chat, thank you so much for listening. We'll see you next week.
Bye-bye.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.